I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hello and welcome to the 326th edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Matt Perkins. And a flea flicker across the Harpeth River from me here in the Music City, it's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
What's up, Matt? What's up, Josh? It's playoff time here in Tennessee, so excited about that. Playoffs? Yeah, it's playoff time here. We got a big matchup against NBA.
National Basketball Association.
Yep, it's Ensworth.
Taking off everyone.
Yep, that's what we do.
Is this the in-season tournament?
It is. We plan on winning it too.
And you guys, they have a special painted field for it.
That's right. That's
it's bright orange throughout.
Yeah, yes. Bright orange with black lines.
Perfect. Just what everyone will be able to tell.
It definitely won't hurt anybody's eyes at all.
Definitely not. Someone who is always easy on the eyes is our third amigo in the second city. Maybe not. A man.
Not when I had that mustache last week.
Oh no, that was something else. But a man whose favorite horse is Little Sebastian. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Accounting, Josh Cook.
I don't mind a Parks and Rec shout
out.
His
favorite horse was Mr. Ed.
No, Little Sebastian is so much more majestic. And again, thank you to all of you tuning in. Part of Mike Farrell Sports. Believe Network, wherever you happen to be consuming the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Want to remind everyone that we are presented by betonline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at betonline.ag. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code Believe. That's BLEAV, BetOnline, where the game starts. We will start here. Like we do every week in season, taking a look back at the week before, one big takeaway each. I'm going to start it off. And my big takeaway is that Oklahoma peaked too early. I think their Super Bowl may have been the Red River game because it has been significantly downhill ever since. They suffered what they would definitely say is their most embarrassing loss, or is a more embarrassing loss, losing the final edition of Bedlam, at least the final edition for the foreseeable future. And what happened again, they got sloppy and they're running into some of the same problems that they had last year. You know, offensive wise, they're doing fine, but they're starting to turn the ball over and they still have a relatively porous defense. Ollie Gordon ran over, around, and through the Sooners defense. And, you know, the takeaways that they were getting earlier in the year haven't been there, but the big yardage they were letting up still has. It's not a good recipe for success for the Sooners and Brent Venables. So, you know, I think that it is, you know, the Sooners are going to fade here. I think as they continue to have more and more attrition on the defensive side of the ball. The race for the Big 12, though, I'm very interested to talk about, and we'll be doing so a little bit later on today's show. But, you know, as it stands, you know, Oklahoma is definitely trending in the wrong direction. So, Coach, what was your one big takeaway from last weekend?
Well, my one big takeaway from last weekend is that even in a loss, Missouri is actually a legit team. We left them for dead in preseason and had Eli Drinkwitz first to go in the SEC. I don't think that's true anymore. They have shown me that they can actually be for real. Luther Burden is the real deal. Connor Schrader is second leading rusher in the SEC. I can see why. Brady Cook has developed into quite a nice quarterback. So I was I came away from that game very impressed with Missouri because I thought Georgia played a very good game, and it looked like it was a really good game between two highly ranked teams.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Mizzou and Eli Drinkwitz have done a lot this year in terms of, you know, I feel like a lot of people said that he was probably the coach on the hot seat the most entering the season in the SEC. And
I know we had that.
Yeah, we definitely had that. And it's just been really good to see how Drink and them boys have, you know, really turned up the offense there. And I'm glad that he is, you know, I think we can say he's not going to get fired this year unless something goes tremendously, tremendously awry in the last 3 weeks of the season. Yeah. But they've got a heck of a recruiting class coming in, like an all-timer class from Missouri. And I am interested to see if he really gets a shot to take those kids, develop those kids, and turn, you know, really start to make something there, because some of this in-state talent Missouri is producing, like this year, 2024, is a bumper crop of Missouri prospects. And Drink is keeping them all in state, which is a really good sign for that program.
Yeah, for sure. And I, like I said, they've done a good job with the coaching staff in general. I think they had a really good game plan against Georgia. They really took advantage of what Georgia's not great at. It's just that for Georgia, talent took over in the end. And that was the difference in that game.
All right, Josh, what was your one big takeaway from the past weekend?
Well, you mentioned Eli worked himself clearly off the hot seat. I think he did that several weeks ago. I've got two coaches going the opposite way. I got a pair of mics that have left a pretty disgusting taste in my mouth.
It's down not Gundy this time, yeah, which is surprising.
I know. Down there at ECU, we got Mike Houston. This is a team that in 21-22 won a combined 15-10, made two bowl games, won the Birmingham Bowl. The other one was a no contest. It was still a COVID issue. So coming off back-to-back bowls, this was a team that we thought could, you know, stay in that kind of middle pack of the American. And with some new teams in the American, maybe pick up a few extra wins. They're awful. They are 1-8, 0-5. Their one win is FCS Gardner-Webb. And they have two more road games and then Tulsa at home. So they got three cracks to avoid Ofer in conference. Anyone care to guess the last time ECU went Ofer in a conference?
The year after Sean King graduated. No, not Sean. I don't know why I said Sean King.
Tulane.
Tulane. No, I would.
Here, I'll give you a hint. The conference was the North State Conference, and it included some teams like Elon and Western Carolina.
1954.
You are pretty close, Coach.
1961.
You guys were both really close, but it was right in between your two guesses. 1957.
Oh.
So Houston is overseeing potentially the worst finish since the mid-50s. Not ideal to break 70-year-old records. And then, you know me, I'm always scuttlebutting around on Reddit, teams' Reddits, team fan pages. And I was doing some digging, preparing for this show, seeing what are the ECU fans are saying. And there is several ECU people saying that Mike Houston assumed he was getting a power conference job and did no recruiting. Backed it in because he didn't think he was going to be here. And that's why the team is so bad. And they're like, he might have just worked himself out of any job. So if there's any truth to that, what a boneheaded, idiotic decision to do that. And then the other Mike Locksley, Maryland, back-to-back bowls as well, 15-11 over their last two seasons. So similar situations. They started out 5-0 this year. What have they done since? They've dropped four straight games, and they're getting more ridiculous each week. Lost by 20 to Ohio State, upset at home by Illinois, lost at Northwestern, and just got obliterated at home 51-15. They have former Texas A&M coach Kevin Sumlin. Pretty big DUI.
Yeah.
Pretty big issue.
He's coaching in the longest yard bowl game.
Yeah. Well, he's already back with the team. No suspension, no nothing. Like, came back basically a week later. So, you know, he can recruit like hell, but man, he is really showing very few signs of improvement on his X's and O's. This was a team that you looked at their schedule, and I was like, they'd have to be completely incompetent to not win 8 or 9 games. Well, they proved me wrong. They are truly incompetent. So two coaches that I'm putting clearly on the hot seat, and not be surprised if either or both is unemployed in a few weeks.
Well, I mean, gosh, Josh, who could have seen this coming from a man with such a stellar record at New Mexico?
I mean, he was turning around. They got to bowl games. They were looking better, but they just have completely imploded. Completely imploded this year.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, we thought Maryland was going to be something, and it's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
We thought they would be the fourth best team in the East, and it's actually pretty
Rutgers.
Literally Rutgers, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought they would be a competitive fourth best. I thought they would hang around in some of these games. They hung around the Ohio State game, only losing by 20, but debacle against Penn State. Part of it might be that Franklin still cannot stand that program. They screwed him over. They did. For our listeners that don't remember, Ralph Regan basically made Franklin his coach in waiting when that was a thing. Remember that? Well, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Coach in waiting. And then Maryland fired Ralph Regan due to attendance issues, even though they won 10 games. And they were like, well, we have fired the coach. Why would we keep the coach in waiting?
Sure.
And I believe, is that when they hired Randy Edsall?
I believe so.
That tracks.
Yeah.
That tracks.
Ooh. And you know what rule killed the head coach in waiting? The fact that if you were head coach in waiting, you couldn't go out on the road recruiting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm assuming they still do coach in waiting. They just don't announce it.
Well, yeah, I thought you will. they only announce it when they have to call it off, like when Brian Ferentz has to be called off. Yeah. As because he was the coach in waiting for he was definitely the coach in waiting like his first 2 years as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, when they actually scored some points.
Yeah.
Who knows? Speaking of unknowns here, a lot of unknowns heading into the last 3 weeks of the season. So we are going to get you primed for the final, you know, for the final couple weeks of the regular season, getting you set for all of the conference title races. Josh is going to break it down for us conference by conference alphabetically, which means starting in the American.
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite things to do. I like to crunch all these numbers. Gives me a chance to really geek out. And it'll give all of you a chance to kind of chime in. One side note, when we get to the ACC here in a few minutes, Louisville is playing Virginia. It's the third quarter. Virginia just scored a touchdown to tie it at 14. So I'll keep an eye on that, and we might have to update something in real time.
Malik Washington made a ridiculous catch for the Cavaliers in the second quarter there as they were marching the ball down the field.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So with that caveat, starting with the American, no divisions for this one. So it's just two best records. Obviously, tiebreakers can come into play as well. We have three teams that are all 5-0 in conference right now. Every record I'm going to give you, right, by the way, is the conference record, because that's all that matters right now. So the three 5-0 teams are Tulane, SMU, and San Antonio, UTSA. Tulane and the Roadrunners, they play each other in the season finale. SMU doesn't face either. Tulane has struggling Tulsa at middling Florida Atlantic, and they host those aforementioned Roadrunners. So assuming they win the other two games, they will be at worst 7-1, even if they drop that UTSA game. SMU has struggling North Texas at 4-1 Memphis and middling Navy. They should also join Tulane at no worse than 7-1. UTSA has that frisky Rice team, an equally frisky South Florida team, and then that trip to Tulane. So if they take care of business at home, they would also potentially end no worse than 7-1. So then you have Memphis, who I just mentioned, lurking at 4-1, and they still have a roadie to Charlotte. They host the SMU Ponies, and they head to that huge tilt with somebody. I forget who they play. Their finale is against someone who's terrible. Anyway, they could also join the crew at 7-1. I didn't even bother to write down Memphis's last game. Tulsa. I think that's their finale. Anyway, the tiebreakers for the American this year are head-to-head, which really doesn't do us much help because SMU plays nobody in this mix, really. So then the next tiebreaker is CFP rankings, which would probably favor Tulane because they're the hot commodity, the proven commodity. And then you have FAU kind of sneaking around at 3-2. The only other winning record in league play right now are those Owls. So honestly, I don't see them upsetting Tulane, and they also have to travel to Rice, which is no picnic. So long story short, you have basically, we're starting the show with a unknown entity. We have four teams still in the mix this latest stage. I have no idea what to make out of all this. And with the silly SMU team not playing any of these clubs outside of that Memphis team, it's really hard what to make of it. So we start the segment with kind of a blah moment, but any of the AAC stuff jumping out at you?
It's going to be a crazy race.
Yeah, it really will be. But we are starting with the most muddled league. So
I mean, I just want to say good for UTSA in their first year in the conference for still being undefeated in the conference. I mean, like that, you know, kudos to them. I mean, yes, some people say, oh, it's just another group of five conference. How different can it be? Like, no, American's been the best group of five conference for a long, you know, over the past 10 years. And for them to step up from where they were to where they are now, it's hats off to them.
Yeah, and I mean, the AAC, think about every realignment rumor. Well, SMU, we already know, is going to the ACC. Tulane keeps getting thrown in any little bit of rumor and scuttlebutt. People had them going to the Pac-12 at one point. So, yeah, I mean, this is still a pretty strong league. Let's move to the ACC. So, pretty easy. No divisions. And one team has already clinched. Florida State is 7-0, but they just have one league game left. They just have Miami. No other team can catch them. So, you know, at worst, they'll be 7-1. The best that can happen would be Louisville tying them. So Louisville, they are in great shape. They're currently 5-1. Again, we're keeping an eye on the Virginia game. So they're in progress right now. They have a game at Miami also left in league. They just have those two remaining games for conference games. So a win in either of those two games actually clinches the title game because they have head-to-head victories over everyone just behind them. So if they lose tonight, they can still clinch at Miami, assuming they come back. You know, it's a tie game right now, assuming they hold on. Like I said, we'll update that once it goes down. But yeah, Louisville's in great shape. So let's say something insane happens with Louisville. They're already in a battle with Virginia. So the other group that is behind them is this just mess of two lost teams. Georgia Tech is 4-2, but they have the tie-breaking losses to both Louisville and BC. They need to win out, which is at Clemson and hosting Syracuse, plus they need Louisville to lose out and then hope nothing strange happens with any of the other two lost clubs behind them. Duke has at North Carolina, at Virginia, and Pitt left. Their two losses are Florida State and Louisville. So if they win out and Louisville loses out, the Blue Devils will sneak in. North Carolina is essentially in the exact same position as Duke, but just a pinch worse because they lost to Georgia Tech. BC has weirdly found a way to win five straight games and has worked themselves in the exact same position as Duke. If the Eagles win out and Louisville loses out, we will be treated to what everyone predicted, an FSU-BC title game. NC State is in a similar position to Carolina. Yeah, NC State's similar to North Carolina. They need to win out, have Louisville lose out, and then have Duke also drop a game. And then finally, still technically alive, Virginia Tech. They are an exact repeat of Duke's exact scenario. So, barring something insane, Florida State, Louisville will be what it is. But there are still a few teams with stuff to play for.
I want to see if we can get to Florida State, Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that would take a few dominoes.
That is the highest chaos scenario for me. So,
I'm 100% love it. Love us some chaos.
Nice. All right. Are we ready for Coach's favorite league, the Big 12?
Love the Big 12.
All right. So Texas and the Fighting Gundies, Oklahoma State, they lead the pack at 5-1. Texas's remaining games are a couple road trips, TCU and Iowa State, and then their finale is back at home against Texas Tech. Even without Ewers, they should be favored to win all three of those games. The Pokes have trips to Central Florida and Houston, and then end with a home finale against BYU. And their level of play the last few weeks indicates that they should be favored to win each of those games, and, you know, probably touchdown plus spreads on that. So what happens if either or both of those two teams stumble? There are an insane amount of teams. Five teams are still lurking at 4-2. So I'm going to group the first two together because Kansas and Kansas State are in the exact same position. Both have lost to Texas and Oklahoma State. Both need to win out, and they would need either of those top dogs to stumble twice. Since they face each other in this scenario, the rivalry game, the Sunflower Showdown, would basically become an elimination game. Oklahoma, who Matt talked about in our opening, they have the head-to-head win over Texas. So if Texas loses just one more and Oklahoma wins out, the Sooners would get that tiebreaker. So the Sooners' path is still possible. West Virginia has a loss to Oklahoma State, but does not play Texas this year. So if the Mountaineers win out, Texas drops a game, then some tiebreaker scenarios would come into play. Based on West Virginia's current computer numbers, though, they would need a fair amount of help, even if they win out. Iowa State holds a head-to-head tiebreaker over Oklahoma State, and they face Texas later in the season. But they also lost to Kansas. So while Iowa State's path is less help-dependent than West Virginia, Iowa State needs Kansas to also get tripped up. Otherwise, that won't help the Cyclones. And then lastly, still kind of alive, they got a faint pulse, they need some CPR, 3-3 Texas Tech. They could win out to get to 6-3, but then would need an insane amount of help to get one of those two top teams, Oklahoma State or Texas, to drop.
Well, you mentioned Oklahoma State and West Virginia here, and they have a really interesting matchup this weekend, I think, with Oklahoma coming off of back-to-back losses, whereas West Virginia is coming off back-to-back wins. It's in Norman. All signs point to Oklahoma, you know, bouncing back here. But, Coach, I think that there is a chance that Oklahoma keeps stumbling along after two tough road trips and, you know, has the potential to, you know, really fall apart here against the West Virginia team that has Garrett Green, you know, coming on at all the right time.
Yeah, West Virginia's getting hot right now, and they could certainly trip up the Sooners. Sooners are kind of rumbling, bumbling, stumbling, limping into the finish. And it's, I don't know, man, this thing is not going in their favor. I think the best shot is the Sunflower Showdown, the winner of that game. Cause I think both those teams are, you know, primed to, you know, make some noise. Now,
who do you have dropping out then?
Dropping out?
Cause Texas and Oklahoma State both have had to have wins over Kansas and Kansas State. So,
yeah, I mean, if it were possible, I don't know. Like, it's a long shot, but like, I guess I would probably have Oklahoma State drop out because that's just kind of what they do. But I think this is going to hold though, truthfully. Yeah. But I think if you're giving me the best shot, Kansas and Kansas State is probably your best option.
Coach just has faith in the track. That's the thing.
Well, what I was going to say is that I have faith in both Mike Gundy to Gundy it up and either lose to the Gus Bus or to lose the home finale when all he needs to do is win to lock up a conference title game and lose there. So, I don't know. I think that would be interesting, but it really does feel like it's going to be Texas and Oklahoma State at the end of the day. But it is just, you know, I am curious to see what happens with Oklahoma over these last 3 weeks if they still try, you know, if they still try, full stop. Mm. Like, I don't know if they're going to, you know, really keep pushing really hard with, you know, a sort of a second now disappointing season in a row.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if they got to go with the mindset of we need to win out and we're just going to trust that Texas stumbles, especially with the health of Quinn Ewers still kind of, we're not exactly sure where it's at right now. So that's what Venables needs to be preaching. You know, we still can win out. We can still make the title game. Our you know, conference title aspirations are still there. Moving on, my league, the Big Ten, as well as Matt's. Coach doesn't care for Big Ten football. He hasn't grown to appreciate the beauty of the Big Ten West just yet. We're working on it, though.
The majesty of the Big Ten West.
Yeah. So no surprise here. The East is down to 3 teams, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. Sorry, Rutgers, I don't see you winning out and then having those other teams all lose 3 more games to join you. So Penn State has by far the toughest path still of the teams in it. They need to beat Michigan by enough to really drop Michigan's computer numbers. So that way, when Michigan beats Ohio State, Penn State would be the highest ranked team because they're all going to be there at 1 loss. So, you know, Penn State basically, they need to find a way to like drop 50 on Michigan and hope that that messes with the computer stuff. Ohio State and Michigan are obviously winner take all mode for when they have their annual rivalry game.
Any chance, Josh, that Penn State's able to pull off victory at home in Happy Valley this weekend?
Well, first of all, like,
I'm sure they've changed their signs.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, Penn State was really, really done dirty by Big Noon Fox, because Happy Valley at its peak is a primetime whiteout game. They hosted both Michigan and Ohio State this year. And they they stuck both the Big Noon game. So their big whiteout game was Iowa. Stupid.
Why not take advantage of that? I hate that. And I'm rooting for Penn State, believe it or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Beaver Stadium will still be loud. You know, it'll still be nice. But it's just not the same. Also, I should point out, I screwed that up. They did play at the Shoe. I was going to say that'd be weird that they had both at Happy Valley. But anyway, so they kind of get screwed over by the scheduling. But my problem with Penn State is when you watch them, they're really efficient and methodical offensively, but that doesn't work against great teams like Ohio State and Michigan. I don't see them generating those big coach's favorite term, hashtag chunk plays.
Chunk plays?
Yeah, I don't see them busting big plays, which you kind of need for the momentum and energy in these huge games. Because it's one thing to just slowly march Iowa down the field. It's one thing to slowly march Maryland down the field. But, like, Michigan's not really going to give that up.
No, and their defense is not going to let you. Like, the more plays you have against a defense like that, they're not going to let you march down. I mean, there's going to be a big play by the defense. Like, against great teams, you have to score in 8 plays or less. Yeah. Or you're not going to score.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt?
I think that I don't know. I feel like the combination of home field plus, not having their signs stolen, plus hoping that they learned from their mistakes against Ohio State when it came to the lack of downfield targets, might make Penn State a viable option here, but I still think that Michigan, like, is, this is going to be super cliche, but like, they're on a mission. Like, they are hell-bent on proving the doubters wrong, shutting down the haters.
It's certainly interesting. You look at Harbaugh's record pre-sign-stealing scandal, post when Connor Stallions supposedly started to do this, and the record is markedly better. So we'll see.
We will see. Ask Blake Corum.
Yeah.
And his LLC.
All right. So let's talk about the Big Ten West. Well, scrappy little Hawks, they did it. They did it again. They were the only Big Ten West contender to win last week. So they are atop the Big Ten West at 4-2. So what's also going to be super annoying to everyone is, even with a loss to Rutgers, which is possible this week because Rutgers looks pretty dang good, they still control their destiny because their final two games are Nebraska and Illinois. This would mean if they drop that Rutgers, they would go 6-3 in the league, but 5-1 in the division, and they'll be set. Why would they be set? What about that loss to Minnesota? The Gophers have a trip to Columbus. So even if Minnesota wins all their other games, they're not winning at Ohio State. So that means Minnesota's ceiling is 5-4. Therefore, Iowa would get it. Wisconsin is 3-3, but the Badgers have the head-to-head loss to Iowa, so they need massive help. And then Nebraska's 3-3. So if Nebraska wins out, Nebraska's the only team that really controls their own destiny. I know Minnesota technically does, but they ain't beating Ohio State. So Nebraska does control their own destiny. So if Nebraska wins out, they're currently 3-3. They win out. That would include knocking off Iowa. So despite losing week one to the Gophers, Nebraska's actually in the best shape to catch and knock off Iowa. So, Hawks and Huskers, let's do it. Matt is shaking his head in disgust.
It's the worst football.
The worst football is right down the road, is right there in Josh's backyard. Josh, if you open the door, you can hear all the boos in Soldier Field. This game is terrible.
You want to hear something sad and depressing?
What's that?
I went to it. But it gets more sad and depressing. I left at halftime. It was 0-0. So I missed the only exciting stuff. I missed it for a good reason. It was my man Dylan's wedding. It was a fantastic wedding. I loved every minute of his wedding. It's just kind of funny that they couldn't have had anything at all exciting in the first half. I believe we call that irony. Is that irony?
No, I know that's called the full Iowa experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, it was worth it leaving at halftime. That game was. But my dad said, he's like, even with all the points in the second half, he's like, it still wasn't good. It still wasn't exciting.
All right.
Yeah. Matt, guess what I got you for Christmas?
What's that?
I got you a double Luke Fickle. It says TEAM on the back and it says TEAM on the front.
Oh, I thought I was going to say MEAT on the front.
Meat.
All right. So next up in our alphabetical tour is Conference USA. So Liberty is 7-0 in the league, and they have tiebreakers over everyone. They have locked in. They're guaranteed. They've already clinched. So even if they lose their remaining games. Jacksonville State is 2-5-1, but barring a change to NCAA policy, they won't be allowed to face Liberty as a transition program. So that leaves New Mexico State at 5-1. If the Aggies beat Western Kentucky this week, they are locked in. No one can mathematically catch them. If they lose, though, New Mexico State would then need to win their finale against Jacksonville State and have Western Kentucky lose at Florida International. And then we get to that Western Kentucky team. They're 3-2, but they're not dead yet. If they win out, they will have the same record as New Mexico State and own the tiebreaker. So it'll be Liberty versus either New Mexico State or Western Kentucky. No thoughts on Conference USA? Other than Jerry Kill yet again?
Yeah, Liberty's just running through people, man. It's nuts.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
For our listeners, like I said, live time is happening. Final stages of the third quarter. Virginia scored. They're up 21-14. Got to keep an eye on that. All right, let's
the smoke by Georgia Tech.
So heading over to the MAC.
Action.
Yeah.
Michigan screwed up so bad that the MAC is going to get disbanded.
So
it really works, in case you're wondering.
So I've typically been going east-west, but I'm going to switch that for the MAC because the east is completely chaotic right now, and the west is really easy. Toledo's already clinched. Toledo clinched. They started 6-0 in the league. Everyone else in that division has at least three league losses, so it'll be Toledo versus somebody. So from the east, Miami of Ohio sits at 5-1, and they have tiebreakers over Ohio and Bowling Green. So while theoretically they could lose out, and that would lead to a cluster of 5-3 teams, the Red Hawks' schedule is pretty favorable. They have Buffalo and Ball State left. They basically have a stranglehold on that division. But we do have 4-2 Ohio and 4-2 Bowling Green lurking, but both need some help. Ohio has to win out to get to 6-2, and then due to that head-to-head loss, they need Miami to drop both their remaining games. Bowling Green needs even more help because they lost to the Ohio Bobcats. So Bowling Green needs to win out, have Miami lose, and have Ohio drop one of their final two games. There is some possibility of crazy mayhem if they all manage to get to 6-2. But, you know, like I said, that's off the table due to the tiebreaker. So even if we got the mayhem situation at 6-2, it actually isn't a mayhem situation because Miami has both those tiebreakers.
Because they chose Allstate?
Exactly. But there is
mayhem like that.
But there is one truly crazy X factor. Buffalo. If the Bulls win out to get to 5-3, and then you have Miami, Ohio, and Bowling Green all stumbling enough to join Buffalo at 5-3, then those tiebreakers, which are really easy all at 6-2, become super complicated because Buffalo would have a loss to Ohio and Bowling Green, but a win over Miami. Miami would have wins over Ohio, Bowling Green, but not Buffalo. Bowling Green would have a win over Buffalo, but not the other two. And Ohio would have wins over Bowling Green and Buffalo, but not Miami. So in this insane scenario, the CFP rankings would then come into play. But like I said, this would be absolutely bonkers. The most logical thing is Miami's going to win the division.
Wow.
This Josh, is why I like to crunch the numbers.
I mean, it's a lot to take in.
You are thorough, Josh, and I love it.
This is what do you want, Josh? Who do you want to be the East representative?
You know, Ohio does probably have the best team on paper, but they haven't played like it. Miami beat them. Miami also beat Bowling Green. Miami's played the best. Miami's the hottest team in this division. Miami just looked amazing the other night in Maction. I think Miami gives Toledo the best game. So I want Miami.
Fair enough. From the Mac football that I've watched, I think Miami is the best one I've seen, at least outside of Toledo.
Yeah.
You know, and so I feel like those are the two best teams that I've watched. So how about the Mountain West?
All right. So despite the chaotic Army loss, which I think we can attribute to turning the ball over roughly 35 times, Air Force is 5-0 in league, and they are still obviously riding high. They have tiebreakers over Wyoming and San Jose State, but they still have to play UNLV, which we'll talk more about the Reds in a moment.
That's weird to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have a nasty trip to Boise. So while they control their fate, it is a pretty arduous task still in front of Air Force. And then should give a side note, they do not face Fresno State this year. And speaking of Fresno, they are 4-1. So barring Wyoming catching them and that tiebreaker coming in, because that's their one loss, the Bulldogs have a pretty clear path to the title game. Their remaining schedule includes New Mexico and San Diego State. And those teams stink. Then we get to UNLV. They have an identical 4-1 mark. Their lone loss was to Fresno. They finish up with Wyoming at Air Force and San Jose State. So any loss in those final three will be a backbreaker for the tiebreakers. UNLV is still going bowling, which is freaking awesome. And an awesome job by Coach Odom there.
Mm-hmm.
The
very freaking Odom.
Yeah. The Boise State Broncos never say die. They're still lurking. They're at 3-2. But their loss to Fresno State is huge in tie-breaking scenarios. They still face Air Force, so they can kind of help their cause there. But Boise really needs a lot of help. Wyoming is 3-2. They also get Air Force, followed by two of the worst teams in the league. So the Pokes aren't dead just yet. They need a lot of help. They're on life support, though. And then San Jose State started out awful. They started out 0-2 in league, but they've ripped off three straight. Their final league games include both UNLV and Fresno, so they can do a lot of help for their cause. It might not be enough to get them there, but they can definitely influence the race if they knock off either of those teams. When I get to the end and give my final picks, I'll tell you what I'm thinking for the Mountain West, but I'm curious what you guys think right now.
I mean, the Army loss doesn't really matter for the Mountain West purposes, so I'm not worried about them. And I still like Fresno, but Wyoming is the drug I can never quit. So I'm going to say,
is Wyoming your new NC State?
I wish I could quit you. yeah, no, it's Wyoming, man. Yeah, give me Wyoming. Give me Wyoming running the table, and then Wyoming Air Force with Air Force's one loss in league being to Wyoming.
I think it's Air Force and Fresno. I just don't see Fresno losing. They're a really strong team. San Jose State. That's also weird to say. They're going to give them some run. San Diego State is going to maybe give Fresno some run later on in the season, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting down the stretch. But I think Fresno State holds it off.
All right. Well, let's get to the Pac-12, and it just would not be a Pac-12 title race.
The league that keeps on giving in its final year of giving.
Yeah. A lot of mayhem. So we'll start with the easiest path. That's obviously Washington. They remain unblemished. They're 5-0 in conference. They've already beaten Oregon, USC, and Arizona. Barring a calamity where they drop multiple of their final three games, which are Utah at Oregon State and now Washington State, this team should be in a title game. I could see them getting upset by one of those teams, but I don't think they drop two or even all three. So Washington feels pretty safe. 5-1 Oregon also controls their fate, thanks to knocking off Utah, and they still have USC and Oregon State ahead of them. Having said that, dropping either or both of those games opens up a real can of worms. So let's talk about that can of worms. The Trojans, still alive, just dumped Alex Grinch, so maybe they'll get better on defense. USC needs to win out, which would include knocking off the Ducks, and then they need to hope Utah doesn't catch them at 6-2, because obviously USC always loses to Utah. They can't beat them. Arizona, just like we all predicted, still in the title race. Arizona needs to win out and then get a whole lot of help.
Yeah, that Arizona team, that Arizona team is good.
Yeah.
I stayed up and watched them last weekend.
I watched them a lot against USC. They're legit, dude.
They're moving the ball.
Yeah. And so the reason Arizona needs to have a lot of help is what Coach just mentioned. They lost to USC, and they don't do themselves any favors by not playing Oregon this year. So they can't mess up that Oregon thing. My pick at the start of the year, Oregon State. They're still around, but they need a few things to go their way. They got to win out, first of all. And then that would give them massive computer boosting wins over, because, you know, they would beat Washington and Oregon if they win out. But if they do that, they'd still only be 6-2. So their best case scenario is a repeat of last year, which is have a huge traffic jam at 6-2. But thanks to all the computer stuff and all that, they get in. That's what Utah did last year. Their other scenario, way less likely, is they get to 6-2 and then have the other teams drop multiple games that we're not really expecting to have happen. And then finally, another zombie team. We can't ever get this team out. Utah, they are still technically around, but that head-to-head loss to Oregon puts them in a real pickle. They would need to win out, which includes giving Washington its first loss, and then find some other help. Maybe the computer numbers work in their favor. Maybe Oregon gets upset in some way. But yeah, Utah's around, but clearly doesn't control their own destiny. Matt, I know you have a lot to say because you love the Pac-12 this year.
I do love the Pac-12 this year. You mentioned that USC needs to win out. They've got a big game this weekend with Oregon.
Yeah, big for both.
It's really big for both. And there's a weird part of me that feels like, for some reason, like USC is going to win, and I can't really explain it, but there's something like deep inside my gut that like feels that USC is going to beat Oregon.
Addition by subtraction.
I don't know. You got me, but there's something there to it. Oregon always seems to trip up and lose this game. And so I don't know. I mean, like, but at the same time, Oregon is such a well-oiled machine at this point. So do you think, Josh, that USC can beat Oregon this weekend?
I mean, stealing what Hugh Freeze said about their Georgia game, they have nothing to lose, right? They're out of the polls.
Yeah.
They're struggling with those two conference losses already. They don't control their fate. CFP, forget about it, even if they win out. Yep. Probably too far back by this point. Caleb's probably lost the Heisman, so he can write off that. They dumped Grinch. The defense will be very different. Don't know if it'll be better, but
hard to get worse.
But the coaching will at least be different. So, you know, there is something to that. They have nothing to lose. Why not? You know, empty the playbook. You've been holding on to that triple reverse option pass to Caleb Williams down the sideline for the whole season so far. Why not call it this game? So there could be something like that. I am going to be more of a realist, and I'm going to assume that the defense still will not look particularly good, and Bo Nix will have fun and put up some points.
Coach, any chance that Utah gives Washington their first loss of the season?
No. No,
they don't call him the best color man in the business for nothing.
Nope, folks. No. You'll see why I'm so brief with that.
Well, Josh, then take us down to where Coach is.
Yeah. Coach's conference. All right. Well, the SEC East is pretty easy.
That's what they're working on at USC. Yep. Trick play.
Yep.
Trick plays.
So yeah. Like SEC East. Thanks to all the head-to-head tiebreakers, Georgia's already clinched it.
This is a very boring conference.
Yeah.
Because it's already all clinched. Like nobody can catch Alabama unless they lose.
That's not true. True.
Come on.
Well, all right, here we go. Let's run through it.
Technically,
Alabama is 6-0, and they do control their own destiny. They have a bunch of tiebreakers already in their favor, and their remaining league games are at Kentucky and at Auburn.
They ain't losing to Kentucky, and they damn sure ain't losing to Auburn.
So 5-1, Ole Miss. All they need to do is win out. And then hope and pray that the Tide somehow lose both those road games.
That would be
there. We go.
I like if that scenario happened. That would be incredible if that happened.
Hang on. It gets better. LSU. This is what LSU needs to have happen. LSU needs to win out. They need to have Ole Miss get beat so bad by Georgia that LSU jumps them in the computer numbers. Then they need Alabama to also lose out again by big enough margins that the computers would also favor LSU.
Okay, while we're at it, let's do Arkansas.
but the SEC is pretty academic. It should be wrapped up very quickly.
It's going to be wrapped up on Saturday. Let's just be.
Josh, you're the first person to ever accuse the SEC of being academic.
All right. Well, let's get to the fun.
Especially Mississippi State.
Unless you want to talk about the Ole Miss game.
Let's talk Ole Miss Georgia for a second because Kiff said they got nothing to lose. He ain't wrong.
No, he's definitely not wrong.
They've got they've got some offensive weapons. I mean, Quinshon Judkins is still the best back in the league.
Huh?
And then you have Jackson Dart, who really good passer, good runner, dual threat guy, is a problem for a lot of teams in this league. Unfortunately, he wasn't a problem for Alabama. And I think that's a lot because Kiffin tries to act like an underdog. And if Kiffin will quit acting like underdog in these big games, he may actually win a few of them. But this is probably the most loaded Lane Kiffin team he's had. So,
yeah,
it'll be a good test. It'll be good. But I think Georgia's depth will went out in the end. I think Georgia's offense being able to move the ball at a consistent clip, which is something I haven't said in a while. They've spread out the wealth very, very well this year, much more than they did last year with Stetson Bennett. Stetson Bennett would either run, throw it to Brock Bowers, or throw it to A.D. Mitchell. And this year they're kind of getting everybody involved, and it's kind of helped soften the blow of not having Brock Bowers there as your safety blanket.
All right.
Yeah.
Josh, let's head to the Fun Belt then.
The Fun Belt, yeah. Last but not least, the Fun Belt. So undefeated James Madison. They appealed again to the NCAA, but barring any change, they will not be allowed in the title game. So that leaves Coastal, Georgia Southern, and App State all lurking at 4-2 or 3-2. So Coastal has a win over App State, but they did lose to Georgia Southern. Southern has that Coastal win, and they face App State in the season finale for both teams. So App State would need to win out and see Coastal drop a game over there in the Sun Belt East. That's the scenario there. Sun Belt West is similar situation, really, where we kind of know who. It's just a matter of how the chips fall. So Troy is 4-1, and they have tiebreakers over both the 3-2 teams, where Texas State and Arkansas State. Texas State's remaining schedule is a pretty big slog. They travel to Coastal Carolina, travel to Arkansas State, and then they finish with South Alabama, who started out the season great, but just they've kind of hit midseason swoon here, and they've had some injuries along the way. For Arkansas State, they have no picnic either. They have a game at South Alabama, Texas State, and at Marshall, who at that point will probably be playing for pride. Marshall's really stunk it up here in the middle part of the season. So yeah, Troy is, for me, it would take something really weird for Troy to screw up winning the Sun Belt West.
Yeah, that feels about right. You know, the it's still idiotic that James Madison can't play.
Yeah.
In
I hate
title
that
game.
I'm beyond livid with that. I mean, it's like they're obviously the best team in the league. Like, let them win a chance. Let them go to a bowl game. What is it going to hurt?
Yeah.
If they earned it, let them go.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to give my last picks and keeping an eye on thing. There's 8:50 left in the fourth. Louisville hit a field goal. They're down 21-17.
Louisville.
But Virginia's driving. Virginia's down in the red zone already. So I don't think we'll be able to vamp long enough to kill off 8 minutes and 50 seconds, considering not. Each commercial break is about 2 minutes. So we won't be able to get the end of that Virginia game. So just a reminder, even if Virginia wins this, holds on, gets the upset, Louisville's still in really good shape. Louisville just has to knock off Miami in their next game. So let's finish off. Here are my picks. So in the American, I'm sticking with Tulane and the Ponies. I know they're ponies. The Mustang, but Ponies is way cooler. So I got Tulane SMU.
Ponies.
Agree? Are we, how we feeling?
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. That sounds outstanding.
Sounds consensus. All right. ACC. I will say I'm a little perturbed about this Virginia situation, but I'm still going to go with Louisville.
Yep.
Taking on the already clinched Florida State.
give me FSU and Virginia Tech. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm going Louisville. This will be a fun one.
Yeah. All right. Big 12. I think Texas still hangs on, and based on finishing with Central Florida, Houston, and BYU, I'm gonna give some love to the Gundies. I feel like this is what you always do, Matt.
Yeah.
And it's a Charlie Brown situation where Lucy pulls the football.
Yes.
But I got to go with the Gundies right now.
It's an Admiral Akbar situation, Josh. It's a trap.
It's a trap. It's a trap. But I think Oklahoma State will pull it out. But should they stumble, give me my honorable mention to Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
Ooh. Yeah. All right. Big Ten. I think Michigan should be able to win against Penn State. I think they should also be able to beat Ohio State, barring Harbaugh getting suspended. But I will take Michigan for right now, and I think, God help us all, my idiot Hawkeyes are going to stumble ass backwards into the title game.
They are. Yeah, that's a no-doubter for me.
Yeah, I think like, who else is going to be there from the West, you know?
Nebraska. Nebraska's got the best chance.
That would be hilarious. Oh.
All right. Conference USA.
I know a coworker of mine would love to see that happen.
Yeah. Conference USA. Liberty's locked in versus Western Kentucky's better on paper, but they're not playing as well. I'm going to go with my heart, the Fighting Jerry Kills. Give me New Mexico State.
Let's do it.
Why not?
Thinking with the heart, not the head on that one.
Let's get it.
Why not?
All right. Mac, I already mentioned Toledo's locked in. I'm going to have Miami of Ohio meet him up.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Here's my curveball. Mountain West. I actually have Fresno and UNLV.
So you have neither my Air Force nor my Wyoming.
And here's my thinking.
Nor my Fresno. You do have Fresno.
Here's my thinking. What that Air Force game reiterated, it's not that we didn't know this, but it reiterated the fact that the triple option is not good for coming from behind. And if you've seen any of Odom's UNLV teams this year, they score so quickly. They put up a crap ton of points. Mm-hmm. So I see a scenario where UNLV is able to get up by 2-3 touchdowns, and the triple option just doesn't let the Falcons get back in.
But are they? They're not going to fumble as much as they did. They're not going to lose all those fumbles like that. Like,
I know
that was. Will they lose 5 fumbles?
Yeah,
I think like that's not going to happen again. That's
Those teams, like every once in a while, they have a game like that, and then for the most part, they may lose one more fumble the rest of the year. All
right. Mm-hmm. Ooh, big development, Virginia. Even though they got to the red zone, held to a field goal. So under 8 minutes left, under 8 minutes, 24-17. Okay. So Pac-12. I got Washington. But it wouldn't be the last season of the Pac-12 without some chaos.
I got Colorado, baby.
I'm going back to my pick in this fall, a few months ago. It's still fall. In the summer. Give me the Beavers. They're going to find a way to do it. Give me Oregon State. Chaos reigns supreme one last time in the Pac-12.
I'm going to go chalk and go Washington Oregon rematch.
Yeah, I am too. Those are clearly the two best teams.
That's fair. SEC. All right. SEC's Georgia. And I don't know. I think it's going to happen. LSU
Auburn.
It's going to be Alabama. Auburn.
Georgia Auburn in the title. Yeah.
Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah.
Pretty clear. That's
pretty clear. Yeah.
All right. Sun Belt. This is my big jaw-dropping moment of the show. Troy.
James Madison.
Appeal that just happened to the NCAA is very different. It's not James Madison president. It's not James Madison donor. It was the Sun Belt, and all the fellow ADs basically signed off on it. The commissioner wants James Madison in it. They had a compelling argument about, you know, the fairness. These are players that went through COVID. You're denying them this bowl experience, but they also tapped into the fact that, you know, the Sun Belt, this would be a huge deal for them to get to one of those prestigious bowl games. This is a very different appeal, having the Sun Belt buy into this. With that much pressure, I know the NCAA likes to be stubborn and, you know, stick to their guns on stuff, but it just feels like the momentum on this, and it's going to make the NCAA look so silly to have a highly ranked team if James Madison does win out. If James Madison wins out, they're for sure a top 20 team to not get to go bowling. The bowls are scrimmages by this point. They're, you know, pointless games in the grand scheme of things. So I think the NCAA is actually going to surprise everyone and come through.
Josh, I love your optimism.
But it ain't going to happen, man, because the NCAA sucks.
It does. Yeah. It does. But, you know, they let the North Carolina wide receiver come back.
Finally.
Yeah.
But again, it took his third appeal to get there. So,
yeah. I think also, you know, the NCAA, the whole rule was because of Marshall and the old Division I AA transfer rules and stuff. With the transfer portal, there's no point for the Marshall rule anymore.
No.
No.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you for that deep research, for coming, breaking down all the scenarios for us. We will get out of here now, as we are already over the hour mark. With one for the road, one or two of the things that you're going to be watching for this weekend. We talked about some of the, some of the ACC scenarios. Two teams that are still technically in it are Duke and UNC. They are facing off on a nice little Tobacco Road showdown with both teams having some, you know, a little bit of up and down play this year. Riley Leonard remains to be seen if he is going to play for He looks like he's actually going to be out. So Grayson Loftus is going to be starting. And he's a true freshman and has, you know, actually one of the better ranked high school prospects at the quarterback position that Duke has ever gotten. So he's an intriguing player. We'll see if North Carolina can kind of right the ship a little bit. And then there is the, I guess I'm calling this the hot seat bowl between Narduzzi and Pitt and Dino Babers and Syracuse. Syracuse 4-5. You think, oh, that's not terrible. It's about Syracuse record. Well, they're 0-5 in conference and have lost. They lost at home to Boston College, which is really bad because Boston College is like, yes, still technically, I guess, like alive, but they're still not a good team. Like
conference title contender.
Well, they also lost at conference title contender Virginia Tech 38.
Matt's PC hate is back and I love it. I'm here for it.
And then on the flip side, Pitt has one league win. They're 1-4. Who is that win over? Frickin' Louisville. So makes no sense. They lose at Virginia Tech as well. They lost at Wake Forest a couple weeks back. Dino, I have friends who are Syracuse fans and they're saying it's time for Dino. If Pitt wins this one, you know, Syracuse, you know, because I feel like Syracuse needs to win. I don't know. They've got enough of a favorable schedule. They got Pitt, Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest coming down the wire. They might be able to make it about eligibility, but even then, I still feel like just Babers has gotten so stale. So, but I'm just sort of morbidly curious about that Pitt and Syracuse game. Coach, what are you curious about this weekend?
Well, obviously, we buried the lead. Yeah, we buried the lead. The game of the week in the SEC is not actually Georgia Ole Miss. It's Vandy, South Carolina, of course.
Oof, God.
Yeah, Matt. Luckily, it's in Columbia, so you don't have to go to that. But
I was at Vandy Auburn last week. That wasn't fun.
That was probably brutal, right? No, in all seriousness, the second-tier game of the week in the SEC is going to be the one that I'm watching out for is Tennessee and Missouri. That game is basically a pick 'em, according to Vegas. Tennessee favored by a point and a half on the road. And a lot of that is because Luther Burden is questionable after getting nicked up last week. On a non-contact injury going for a ball in the end zone. So if he doesn't play, that obviously is a big, huge blow to Missouri, as that's their biggest weapon. But I think Connor Schrader will be able to do some things on the ground against Tennessee. Tennessee's got to use tempo even more so than they have been, and Joe Milton's going to have to play well because he hasn't played that great all year long. And it goes back to his embarrassing loss against their embarrassing loss against Florida, where he played kind of putridly. So this game will lead everyone to believe that Missouri is for real. If Tennessee wins this one, they get some good momentum for their home class with Georgia to end.
If Tennessee loses, they might have to go back to McDonald's, get some more recruits.
Yeah, they really might have to. It's bad. If Tennessee loses, I could see a situation where Nico, I'm not even gonna try his last name, but Nico Imalva. There's no way it's that easy.
It is, actually.
There's no way.
There is.
Okay, Nico Imalva. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. I could see a scenario where Nico Imalva could play some quarterback here. Imalva? Down the Volvo the words are tough right now. The stretch run of the season.
Your Aunt Mulva. All right, Josh, what are you watching out for besides reruns of Seinfeld this week?
Well, I got three games, but two of the games feature the state of Iowa, so I guess it's a two-pack. I'm going to be all over that Western Kentucky, New Mexico State game. I think that's really intriguing. Fighting Jerry Kills. Let's get it done. That'd be so cool if they make the title game in their first year back in a conference after that crazy independent odyssey. The Iowa State at BYU game. I don't even care about the fact that Iowa State's still technically alive. This would get them to the sixth win of the year with all that happened in their offseason for them to get to bowl eligibility, Matt Campbell would for sure have to be sniffing around that Big 12 coach of the year. Even if they only go like 6-6 or 7-5, because it's just been crazy what he's been able to patch together. And then my third one is the Iowa Rutgers game. And I'm not going to be an Iowa homer right now. I'm not going to talk about what Rutgers has done this year. They're 6-3. They locked up their first legitimate bowl because during the COVID season, they got to go when they were 5-7. So they locked down their first legitimate bowl season in quite a while. If they knock off Iowa and Iowa City, that gets them to 7 wins. Probably won't beat Penn State and Happy Valley, but then they finish with that very struggling right now Maryland team at home. There's a puncher's chance this team gets to 8 wins in the regular season. Let's be optimistic, say they win their bowl games. 9-win Rutgers still alive on the table. That would be incredible.
I would love that.
That would get my pick for coach of the year in the Big Ten for Greg Schiano if they get to 8-4 and have that nice conference record. That would get them to above 500 in league play. That have them end 5-4 in league play.
Josh, I don't think that you can be eligible for Big 12 coach of the year if you lose to the Ohio Bobcat.
Hey, you know what? That game is the weird oddity one. That's the one where they had terrible food poisoning and like 80 Iowa State players were just puking on the sideline the whole game. Like,
yeah, and then he was yelling at the fan or the guy after the game. I don't know if you remember that. There was
fan was like, "You're on the hot seat, Matt. On the hot seat." Matt Campbell just like stares daggers at him. He's like, "I'm about to be the all-time winningest coach of this program history. Sit down."
Yeah. Hot seat. Get out of here with that.
Get out of here. All right. Well, we're going to get out of here with that right now. We hope everyone enjoys.
Last update for everyone holding on to the edge of their seats. Louisville tied the game with 5.5 left.
So. Well, then we're going to sign off and watch the rest of that one.
Yep, I'm going over that one. Screw
this. I gotta watch the Iowa Virginia Tech women's basketball game top 10 showdown. I recorded it. I don't know.
No, he's who being won. Serious.
I knew he was being serious about that. I'm gonna be serious about catching the rest of this Louisville game. So we're gonna sign off here on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast, part of the Believe Network and MikeFerrellSports.com. So on behalf of our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton, here in Nashville, Tennessee, and our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Accounting up there in the windy city of Chicago, Illinois, Josh Cook, this is Matt Perkins saying so long and see you next time on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast.
Boiler up.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.